Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Almost exactly 10 months after the fateful November 22nd, the seven members of the Warren Commission, headed by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, come to the White House to give to the President the results of their painstaking investigation into the determinable facts of the assassination of President John F. Kennedy.
But just what did the Warren Commission say? Here's the gist of it from a September 1964 newsreel.
The report's 300,000 words trace the facts, and without prejudging the implications of that day that started so brightly and ended so blackly at high noon on the streets of Dallas. Through questioning of every possible witness, restaging of the events of the morning drive, the commission reports that the fatal shots that entered President Kennedy's head and throat were fired by Lee Harvey Oswald from the Texas School Book Depository, acting solely by himself, and that there was no conspiracy, either foreign or domestic.
The report also had plenty of criticism.
The commission finds some inadequacies in security measures that might have saved the president's life had there been more liaison between the FBI and the Secret Service.
And what about the shooting 2 days after the assassination of Lee Harvey Oswald by Jack Ruby, a nightclub owner with ties to the mafia?
In the circumstances surrounding the shooting of Oswald 2 days later, it found the Dallas police and the press sharing responsibility for the breakdown of law enforcement.
At the time, most Americans accepted these basic conclusions. 6 decades later, most Americans do not. I'm Paul Brandis. You're listening to Countdown to Dallas, a podcast series based on my book of the same title. Six decades later, the report issued by the Warren Commission continues to be a matter of ridicule for conspiracy buffs. The commission blew it, they say. The report's central findings that there was no conspiracy is just wrong, they say. But that is not what the report said.
The Warren Commission did not say there was no conspiracy. The Warren Commission said there was no evidence of a conspiracy, and nothing solid has come out in the 40 years since.
That's Sid Davis. In 1963, he was a Westinghouse White House correspondent and was in Dallas that awful day. In fact, was on board Air Force One and witnessed the historic swearing-in of Lyndon Johnson. Davis spoke at a National Press Club seminar in 1993. Conspiracists argue that the Warren Commission was wrong in saying that there was no conspiracy. But, as Davis said, that is not what the commission said. The commission left the door open to a conspiracy, albeit just a crack, by saying only that it could not find clear and verifiable evidence of one. It says on page 21, item 9 of its report, quote, "The commission has found no evidence that either Lee Harvey Oswald or Jack Ruby was part of any conspiracy, domestic or foreign, to assassinate President Kennedy," unquote. This does not rule out a conspiracy. The commission only says they cannot find verifiable proof of one. It adds in subsection A, quote, "The commission has found no evidence that anyone assisted Oswald in planning or carrying out the assassination," unquote. And in subsection B, quote, the commission has found no evidence that Oswald was involved with any person or group in a conspiracy to assassinate the president. And subsection C, quote, the commission has found no evidence to show that Oswald was employed, persuaded, or encouraged by any foreign government to assassinate President Kennedy, or that he was an agent of any foreign government, unquote. Again, there could have been a conspiracy, but the commission only says it could not find one. The door was left open just a bit for others to find one. So here we are, six decades later, and after countless books, TV shows, and whatnot, still no, and these are the operative words, no conclusive, verifiable proof of a conspiracy. Doesn't mean there wasn't one, but so far no one has been able to present, again, conclusive and verifiable proof that there was. Perhaps one reason conspiracy buffs overlook this distinction is because they perhaps have not really read the Warren Report like they say. Most folks you speak with say they're very familiar with it, but Paul Gregory, who actually knew Lee Harvey Oswald well and is featured prominently in prior episodes of this podcast series, says few people have actually read the entire 26-volume, 16,000-page report, which features more than 3,100 exhibits and 552 witnesses.
If anyone says more than 5%, they're lying, because you have all the exhibits, you have all the appendices, and so on. So I would say I've read, but if you're a good researcher, you know where to look, and so you know where, also you know where not to look. So I think I got the, probably I'm up to like 10 or 20%, but in terms of material that's of immediate interest, I'd say I got close to 80%.
Gregory had some 20 interactions with Lee and Marina Oswald after they arrived in the U.S. in 1962. His book, it's called The Oswalds, is illuminating. Books written by those who actually knew Oswald carry extra weight, and Gregory, a research fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford and the Cullen Professor Emeritus in the Department of Economics at the University of Houston, conveys immense credibility. Another historian weighs in here as well, Stephen Beschloss, a professor at Arizona State University and author of The Gunman and His Mother, another great book which looks at the relationship between Oswald and his mother Marguerite. Here's a portion of our recent conversation.
When people say that the Warren Commission was wrong in saying there was no conspiracy theory, that's not what the Warren Commission said, if you read it. All the Warren Commission said was we couldn't find evidence of one. They left the door open just a bit for future historians to find one. Tell me about that.
Well, I think the thing I would say to you is that, also people think that the Warren, Commission report is those hundreds of pages that give that summary that you shared. But, for me, what was important was, behind that were 18,000 pages of testimony and, interviews and documentation that they had as a basis for the findings that they had. And so, that's a treasure trove that I think has stood the test of time. It surely, in my case, it made it possible to build a story about, a family and a set of relationships, cousins and aunts and uncles and neighbors and friends and all of that. And all of those people were part of the building of their understanding. So, to me, that didn't represent, a rush to judgment as much as it did an effort to try to, meaningfully understand what they were dealing with. But again, I think we're 60 years on of people wanting an answer that matches the scale of this crime of the century. And I think as you and I know, sometimes the answer can be as dismal and disappointing as the fact that this person, and his downward spiral, led him to cross paths with the president.
Indeed, here's an interesting question asked in the finale of a multi-part CBS News investigation into the assassination in 1967. Here's Walter Cronkite.
Over these months, as we prepared this report, we began to realize that there is one more question to be answered. That question does not really involve the assassination or the Warren Commission, except indirectly. It involves the people of the United States. We began to wonder how it is possible that so many more Americans disbelieve the Warren Report than have ever read it. Why, for instance, when fewer than 2 million copies of the report have been sold, a Gallup poll indicates that 6 Americans out of every 10 think they know enough about it to mistrust it. Or why, by a considerable margin, more people have bought copies of books attacking the report than have bought the report itself. Such indications began to suggest that, completely apart from the merits of the Warren Report itself, there may be something abroad in the land that wants not to believe the report's conclusion that President Kennedy was the victim of a lone madman and not of a conspiracy.
Interesting question, isn't it? However, and in defense of conspiracy theorists, they are correct about one important thing. They say the commission missed things. They're right. The commission did miss things. 552 people were interviewed, but others were not. Still, others were interviewed, but probably not interviewed sufficiently. I'll give you just one example here, perhaps the most prominent example of all, Jacqueline Kennedy. On June 5, 1964, Chief Justice Earl Warren and the Commission's Chief Counsel J. Lee Rankin went to Mrs. Kennedy's home in Georgetown. It was just the three of them, plus Attorney General Robert Kennedy, the widow's brother-in-law. Beginning at 4:20 that afternoon, the testimony lasted all of 10 minutes. Mrs. Kennedy described her husband's final seconds, the expression on his face, and so forth. She was asked how many shots there were. She thought there were two. She was not asked where she thought the shots came from. That insight would have been extremely valuable. Did she see anything else? Did she learn anything from anyone in the aftermath that might prove helpful for investigators? Nothing like this was asked. And redacted from her testimony was a description of her husband's wounds. This was done out of respect for her. The interview with Mrs. Kennedy was done quickly and delicately because Warren and Rankin wished to spare her from additional torment. It was perfectly understandable. Jacqueline Kennedy's suffering after the assassination was deep and profound, and the commission did not want to prolong it by probing too deeply or for too long. In fact, the commission wanted to wrap up the entire investigation fast, and that's just what it did. The commission first met on December 5, 1963, just 13 days after the assassination. Work wrapped up the next summer with the final report released to the public in September 1964. A good book on the history of the Warren Commission is A Cruel and Shocking Act by Philip Sheehan.
In my book, I make the argument that, you know, that the Warren Commission missed a lot, and that Oswald may have had not, there wasn't a second gunman in Dealey Plaza, but that he may have told people what he was going to do, which might make them accomplices. So, I mean, there could be something like a conspiracy, but it's certainly not the sort of conspiracy that, you know, Oliver Stone would point to.
Again, like the Warren Report itself, Sheehan says there could be a conspiracy, but, and again, also like the commission, couldn't find one. There's a point to be made here. Conspiracy buffs are always ripping the commission for not finding a conspiracy during its rushed 9-month probe. And yet the conspiracy buffs have had 6 decades and have not been able to deliver verifiable proof of one either. So when those conspiracy buffs rip the commission for missing things in 9 months, it's only fair to point out what they've missed, or perhaps chosen to overlook, in 6 decades.
We were sitting on the 5th floor, right directly on the 6th floor, and the shots came from above, and there was a gun. The shots were sounding boom, click, click, boom, click, click, boom, click, click. So there was 3 shots fired right above us, and we were sitting on the 5th floor.
Just one example, Harold Norman, a depository worker, watching the motorcade from the 5th floor of the depository, he and 2 buddies heard three shots being fired right over their heads. One of those friends, Bonnie Ray Williams.
I think one guy, I don't remember which one it was, said that I believe they're shooting at the president. And I believe it came from right up over us.
How many shots did you hear?
I heard three.
The gunfire was so loud, right above them, they could also hear the rifle shells hitting the floor, and they were coated with plaster that fell on their heads. Down on the street, Amos Ewens was a 16-year-old high school student. Listen to him describe a piece of pipe sticking out the sixth floor window.
When he come around, and when I was standing there, I happened to look up and I seen a pipe, you know. So I never did pay no attention, thinking it might be a pipe, just a pipe, you know, sticking out. So it was sticking out about a foot, about that high, you know. So
point out for me the window where you saw this piece of pipe.
Well, it was about on the sixth floor, right below the bouncer.
But wait, there's more.
After the third shot, of course, the car is still moving. I just looked straight ahead of me because we were facing the book depository. And that's where the sound came from. I just looked up there, and there's a rifle resting on the ledge, on the window ledge. And I'm sitting there trying to balance a camera in my lap that has no film in it. And so immediately, the rifle was drawn in. I did not see a figure, just enough of the stock and the barrel to know it was a rifle. So I said, there's a rifle. And Tom Dillard, Dallas News photographer, was sitting next to me. And he said, where? I pointed out the window. He took a picture of the empty window.
Bob Jackson, then with the Dallas Times-Herald, missed getting a photo of the rifle in the window. What a picture that would have been. 2 days later, however, he did get the photo of Oswald being shot. Jackson won the Pulitzer Prize for that. I mention all these people, Norman, Williams, Ewens, Jackson, for this reason. Numerous conspiracy writers give short shrift to them, never mind that they saw the gun, heard the shells, felt plaster falling upon them. James Douglas, author of JFK and the Unspeakable, a book widely praised by conspiracists, mentions none of these people. Another book widely praised by conspiracists that's called Who Really Killed Kennedy by Jerome Corsi also ignores the men who saw the rifle, heard the shells, felt the plaster. He does mention Amos Ewens, but seems to dismiss him as, quote, a 16-year-old African-American student.
More Countdown to Dallas right after this quick break.
I'm Ken Harbaugh, host of Burn the Boats from Evergreen Podcasts. I interview political leaders and influencers, folks like award-winning journalist Soledad O'Brien and conservative columnist Bill Kristol, about the choices they confront when failure is not an option. I won't agree with everyone I talk to, but I respect anyone who believes in something enough to risk everything for it. Because history belongs to those willing to burn the boats. Episodes are out every other week wherever you get your podcasts.
Around 10,000 BCE, families and tribes of the ancestors to the people of Britain would arrive in the southern part of the island after crossing from land that bridged from Europe. The Welsh built houses, communities, kingdoms, and continued to survive through Romans, Saxons, Danes, and Normans. The language and culture influenced by these sources continued to change and thrive, becoming ancient and modern at the same time. Join me as we travel through the history, meeting the kings, queens, nobles, and everyday people that create and grew modern Wales from the seeds of the ancient past. Creoso, and welcome to the Welsh History Podcast.
If conspiracists can complain about what the Warren Commission missed or overlooked in 9 months, it only seems fair to note what they have missed or overlooked in two-thirds of a century. They'll have you look at shadows and photographs, tell you to read this book or website, go down this or that rabbit hole, but men who saw the rifle, heard the shells, felt the plaster? No. Here's Vincent Bugliosi, author of one book you should read, the sweeping 1,600-page Reclaiming History.
The very things that the conspiracy theorists were accusing the Warren Commission of, i.e., suppressing the evidence, distorting the evidence, it was they who were guilty of these precise things.
And when you speak with conspiracists, they insist they've done the research. Hey, you should read James Douglas's book, they say, or this book or that book. But authors of conspiracy books, which make up the bulk of books on Kennedy's murder, tend to cite one another. It's a reinforcing dynamic, though, as I've noted, a sometimes misleading one. I mentioned a few minutes ago that those who actually knew Lee Harvey Oswald carry extra weight here, for their insight is personal and firsthand. Conspiracy buffs, as they look for shadows and photographs and assorted loose ends, often overlook or downplay this. Some examples.
What Lee missed from his childhood, in comparison to me, was the whole family being together all the time, the continuity there. The stability, the lack of stability, I think, entered into that to a large degree.
That's Robert Oswald, Lee's older brother, in 1993. And in yet another interview, he added this.
I think Lee, acting alone, not only killed the police officer, but shot and killed the President of the United States. And let me hasten to add that if I had thought for one moment that Lee did not do it, there would be nothing that could really stop me from determining who. No doubt in my mind about it.
But was Lee involved with anyone? Robert Oswald spent years pondering that and says no.
No doubt in my mind about it. Now, I can face the reality of that because the facts bear it out. But I cannot accept the facts that they've got him thrown in with this group of individuals because the facts do not bear it out. No way was he involved with the group of people in any remote sense, whether he was trying to warn the FBI that the president was going to be assassinated as they indicated. They have him doing all kinds of things. Now, they portray him as a highly intelligent agent. He was trained in the Russian language to be this. That's why he went to Russia. No.
Priscilla Johnson McMillan, who interviewed Oswald in the Soviet Union and later spent months with Marina researching her book, Marina and Lee, doesn't buy it either.
Anybody who thinks that he wasn't capable of planning something and carrying it off alone is wrong. Even wronger would be to think that somebody else could get him to do anything they wanted him to do. He didn't do anything with anybody.
And Marina herself downplaying that possibility with Dick Cavett in 1977.
Do you think it will ever go away?
You want to?
The conspiracy theory, yes. Does it still occur to you that
it's not because the conspiracy really exists, it's just the people who want to believe that way. Maybe somebody, no matter how honest you are and how hard you try to prove the truth, some people just close their mind and believe their own way.
Yes, there are people who cling to it.
Most conspiracy books don't mention these comments either. Again, comments from those who knew Lee Harvey Oswald better than anyone. Why? There's much more to say about this shocking crime, the events leading up to it, its immediate and long-term aftermath, and the numerous characters involved. Also, why is it that we as humans often believe conspiracy theories in the first place? Not just JFK, but everything from Pearl Harbor to the moon landing to 9/11, even Princess Diana's car crash. I'll save all of that and more for some future bonus episodes. For now, though, let me return to Walter Cronkite.
It is difficult to be totally content. Yet experience teaches all of us that any complex human event that is examined scrupulously and in detail will reveal improbabilities, inconsistencies, awkward gaps in our knowledge. Only in fiction do we find all the loose ends neatly tied. That is one of the ways we identify something as fiction. Real life is not all that tidy. In 1943, Lieutenant John F. Kennedy came under enemy fire behind Japanese lines in the Pacific. His PT boat was destroyed. His back, already weak, was re-injured. Yet he swam 3 miles, towing a wounded shipmate, found shelter on an island, escaped Japanese search, encountered natives who carried messages back to American forces. crossed undetected through enemy waters as enemy planes hovered overhead, and survived to become president. The account of his survival is full of improbabilities, coincidences, unknowns. So is the account of his death. So would be the account of your life, or mine, or the life of any one of us. Concerning the events of November 22, 1963 in Dealey Plaza, the report of the Warren Commission is probably as close as we can ever come now to the truth.
Thanks to Stephen Beschloss, Philip Sheehan, and Paul Gregory. Sound from British Path Newsreels, the National Press Club, C-SPAN, Hard Copy, The Sixth Floor Museum, PBS's American Experience, The Dick Cavett Show, and CBS News. Our editor and producer, Aaron Land. Audio engineer, Sean Rule Hoffman. Executive producers, Michael DeAloia and Gerardo Orlando. I'm Paul Brandis. Thanks so much for listening.
History is complicated. The story of human progress is long, messy, and riddled with controversies big and small. On Conflicted, we dive headfirst into history's most infamous events and contentious figures. We try and untangle the good from the bad, the fact from the fiction, and the monsters from the misunderstood. Was Genghis Khan a murderous butcher or a civic pioneer? Did the Allied powers go too far in firebombing the German city of Dresden at the twilight of World War II? And how did the Marquis de Sade acquire such a sinister reputation? And was any of it true? These are just a few of the tough questions we wrestle with and investigate on Conflicted. So if you love history or just enjoy a good story, please join me, your host, Zach Cornwell, for a fascinating new topic each and every month. Conflicted, a history podcast, is available on Spotify, Apple, or wherever else you get your podcasts. I hope to see you soon.